Okay, Erev Tov, good evening. We're getting through Sefer Ruot. We're on Perek Gimel, which is probably one of the most challenging, difficult stories in the whole of Tanakh because of the, not just the irony of Perek Gimel, but the everything that's going on. As I said last week, we saw that Ruot and Boaz, you know, are being sort of steered into the same direction, as it were, but there's a lot of information still that we need to cover in order to understand why this was just an incredible event. We are going to deal with something here, which we know the law in the Torah is a law which is known as Yibum. And Yibum is normally translated as the, what? If you can translate the word, you normally have to explain what Yibum is. Yibum is a very old concept where if two brothers were, one brother was married, there's two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven was married to, let's say, to Rochel, and then unfortunately Reuven dies and there's no children, Shimon, the brother, has an obligation to marry Rachel. He has an obligation to do so. And if he does not do so, then he has to perform a ceremony known as Chalitza. Chalitza is when you take off the shoe. She actually takes off his shoe, if I'm not mistaken. She does it. There's, if you look online, there you can actually see a chalitza performed in Israel. There is one on YouTube, believe it or not. It takes about an hour. It's actually quite interesting to watch. The room was packed with yeshiva boys all wanting to watch it. Yeah. They have the, and the chalitza shoe. It's normally, in the one that they show you from Israel is a very soft shoe. It looks like something out of the Elizabethan Shakespearean play. It's and there probably were different shoes used in different circumstances. It's interesting because I gave a shiur in London for many years, Gemara shiur, which I was giving, and one of the gentlemen talked about chalitza once, and this gentleman put up his hand and he said, "Oh, by the way, I did a chalitza once." So, you know, I like, whoa, wow, you know, that came out of left field. And then he explained exactly what happened. And in London, I think they do one or two a year, chalitzas. Not that many, but I guess here, the Beth of America would be interesting to know. Maybe we can ask Shlomo Weissman and find out how many chalitzas they do a year. Yeah, get a statistic. I'd be interested to know how many. Yeah. One during the time. Yeah, it's not that common, but it does happen. And it's certainly, chalitza is the equivalent of a get. I mean, it releases the person who, the woman who wants to marry whoever she wants, she will be released through the ceremony of chalitza, which nowadays is what we do. In the Arab countries where Jews were traditionally married to more than one wife, then Yibum was practiced and continues to be practiced probably up to this present day. The Yemenites, I mean, they came to Israel with more than one wife and would be doing Yibum right through to this present day, why, one and two.
Why would it be a rarity over here?
It's a rarity because, again, it just doesn't happen that often that this circumstance comes about. All right, I don't know the, I mean, one can get into a statistic discussion about this, but it's not that often. But again, I don't know. I may be surprised. You know, if I hear from the Beth Din of America that they do more than the number that I think they would do a year, then, you know, there may be more than that. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking of the number in London that they've told me, and it wasn't that many. Yes, sorry, Elliot.
I thought this practice was abolished with the destruction of the temple.
No. Well, the chalitza wasn't abolished, and even Yibum, when it actually stopped, it's more than likely it stopped at the same time as the Gershon, Rabbeinu Gershon Takonot. There was 1,000 years ago. One of the Rebbes of Rashi, he made a rule in Europe that the that Jewish men should not marry more than one wife. All right. Now, that was not necessarily made for financial reasons or any other possible reason that you can think of, but it was done because they were in Christian Europe. And Christian Europe was very particular on being married to one woman. That was it, monogamy. So the Jews felt very uncomfortable that they would be in a position that they would be married to more than one wife, when their neighbors who were watching them the whole time, what they were doing, you know, they would be sort of married to many wives. So Yibum and multiple marriages, that was already out about 1,000 years ago. The big deal was that the Gezerah, the what is called Cherem, the Cherem of Ben Gershon, was made for 1,000 years. And it ran out about 20 or 30 years ago. But it hasn't, nobody has suggested that we should go back to the original arrangement, okay, for reasons which I suppose are kind of obvious. Well, that's the thing. It's either or. If you can't do Yibum, then you have to do Chalitza. So that's the point. And that's what you've got. Now, what is so interesting is that in the book of Ruth, we're going to get a situation which is not called Yibum, but it's like Yibum. It's like Yibum, meaning in the sense that there is a situation like this, that Mahlon and Kilion and Elimelech, remember at the beginning, they ran away. And before they ran away, there was some property that they owned. Property in the family, right, the Nachalat Avot, or whatever it's called. And that was sold. It seems that they sold up. And the issue here is now going to be a very interesting discussion in the book, in the story, which not only revolves around Boaz and Ruth basically marrying, but it starts with the concept, the problem of this land. The land that is family land has to be redeemed, has to be brought back to the ownership of the family. And the reason why that is because there are various laws with Yovel and with the ownership and redeeming land. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's coming up in the Parsha in a few weeks' time, in Parsha Bahar, and you can read all the different halachot there. It talks about the word geula, to redeem. And basically, what's going to happen in the book of Ruth is that Boaz understands that, in essence, he and Ruth have to marry. Even though the circumstances, you'll see in a minute, is very strange. But more than that, the reality is that before they can do that, the land issue has to be solved. This land issue is something where this land has to be brought back into the family name. And in order to do that, there is what is called an act of redemption that has to take place. And the act of redemption has to be performed by the closest relative of the person who died. So in this case, Elimelech died. And then we look around, does he have any brothers alive who can go and perform the act of redemption to get the land back? And the answer is yes. There is a brother whose name, Boaz calls him Ploni Almoni. He doesn't even give him his name. He's Mr. Anonymous. The rabbis say his name was Tov. He had a good name. Tov, that was his name. Tuvia, I don't know what you would call him. And he is the closest relative. So what would happen is that when he redeems the land, at the same time he gets all the attachments to the land. Now, who's attached to the land? Not only the crops, not only what grows in the land, but the people. Now, which people are attached to this piece of land? Turns out, Ruth, because this is the land belonging to the family, which, in this case, the halakha dictates that this land has to be redeemed together with the requirement, not only redeeming the land, but of marrying the person who's connected to the land. So whoever redeems the land has to marry Ruth at the same time. And the problem is that this initially is not Boaz. He is relative number two who's still alive. Relative number one who is still alive has to be consulted before Boaz can come along and say, I'll do it, I'll go ahead and redeem the land and marry Ruth.
Why was it not Naomi?
And Naomi is clearly, she's old at this point, she's not in the position of marrying at this point. It's. I tell you what it is. It's essentially considered to be keeping alive the name of the sons of Naomi as opposed to the husband of Naomi. And the sons of Naomi, Mahlon and Kilion, die. And that family name they want that family name to be continued. And it will be continued through Ruth. Provided, of course, that Ruth is Jewish. That's the bottom line. And that's the complication with the whole story, yeah.
And when does she actually convert?
And of course, that's going to be a big question, that has she already converted? She's begun the process. The Bet Din has already established that she is Jewish by standards which Boaz has already put into action. All right, because we spoke about that last week, that there's been a decision of accepting female Moabite converts. Okay, Moaviv lo Moavit. Moabites, male and not female. And in other words, the males are excluded and the females can be included. So that is a halakha which has become very contentious and is really something which doesn't become Jewish practice for a very long time. It's used in very irregular circumstances, but later on with King David, it becomes a very big issue. And we've spoken a lot about that when we learned Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Bet. It doesn't leave David really for a long time. The slur on his family to say that he's descended from Ruth, therefore he's not Jewish. And Doeg Edomi, if you remember this character Doeg, is using it the whole time. How can we have a king who's supposed to be the king of Israel and he's not even Jewish? All right, can you imagine? That was an unbelievable thing to say.
When Mahlon and Bilhah died,
yeah.
Don't the Yorshim of the family get it automatically?
Yeah, no. The point, it's not quite like that because it must have been sold beforehand. It will come back probably in the laws of Yovel. That's that I would guess. But here we're talking about redeeming it beforehand. One guess is that before you get to that, there is a special halacha of getting it back as soon as possible. This is what's going on here. All right, and I think this is the halachas that we have coming up in Parshat Behar. There are certain situations where if you want to go and redeem it, how do you go about redeeming the land? Okay, and I think this is what we're talking about. The other thing I want to mention is the question of Geula, the word that is used here, redemption. And it's such an interesting word, because what are we really seeing over here is the birth of the Goel, of the Redeemer. All right, we're seeing the birth of Mashiach. And that's why the whole concept of redeeming the land is so significant, and why the word Geula is used here, because in the end of the day, who is coming out of this whole story? Mashiach ben David, the final redeemer of the world. So it's really very, very beautiful that the whole story revolves around this strange concept of Geula, which we don't even have today. It's something which is not with us. And this is what I wanted to show you on this page. Just, you want to give out some more of the pages? Quickly, I just wanted to show you very briefly on this page that I've got here from the commentary of Rav Bachrach, before we look at the chapter. He talks about Yibum and he talks about Geula. And I'm sorry the print is so incredibly small. There's nothing I can do about it. I had too much to put on the page and I couldn't really increase it. But we'll try and get through this. It's page A, the first side, number one. The mitzvah of Yibum and Geula. And the quotation is from the Ramban. All of the Mefarshim here talk about the Ramban. The Ramban's comments on this particular story. And the Ramban is actually found in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, which is another quasi-Yibum story, if you think about it. All right, it's about marrying the widow of the person who died. And of course, what happens over there in the case of Yehuda and Tamar is that Tamar essentially entices Yehuda to impregnate her, to have a child, which is the beginning of the messianic process. We'll put all of that together, Mitzvah Hashem, right at the end. For a bit of homework, the thing to, if you can get your hands on the art scroll, Ruth, is to read the introduction there, the last part of the introduction, which is called The Murky Roots of Monarchy. It's a wonderful piece. Rabbi Sherman, I think, wrote it. And of all of the art school introductions that I've read, apart from what Rav Gifter is brought in the Hebrew at the beginning of Shir HaShirim, this other introduction is worth buying the book for the introduction, if you see what I mean. Not that the book is a bad book, but the introduction is really outstanding. But we'll come back to that introduction at the end. It'll be an outroduction, I suppose, if the opposite of an introduction is finishing the book. I'm not sure. Whatever. So have a look at this. Ramban, number one. I just want to look at it very briefly. Aval hinyan yibum. What is this thing about yibum, of marrying the brother, marrying the widow? Sod gadol misodot ha-Torah. Yibum is one of the secrets of the Torah. But toldot ha-Adam, in the creation of man. V'nikarhu le'enei ro'im, and it's people who see it will recognize. Asher natan lahem Hashem einayim lirov v'aznayim lishma. If you've got eyes, you can see it. Ears, you can hear. You'll get it. And this is the typical Ramban. What is he talking about? I'm not even sure. But he goes like this: Vayu chachamim akadmonim kodem haTorah matan Torah. There were rabbis already before the Torah, or there were great wise people before the Torah. Wasn't rabbis yet. Yodim, they knew ki yesh toelet gedola biyibum ha'ach. They knew that the brother marrying the widow, his sister-in-law, there's a very great benefit from that. V'hu ha'ro'i liyot kodem bo riacharav akarov mishpacha. And the way it would work is that he would come first, and if he wouldn't marry, then you go to the next one in the family. Not necessarily another brother, it could be an uncle, anyone who's allowed to marry. Ki kol she'ero akarov elav mishpachto, asher hu yoresh nachala. And it's anyone who is in line to inherit the family plot, or whatever it may be, Yagia mimenu to'elet, will get a benefit not only from getting the family Yerusha, but also from marrying this widow. And they had the custom to marry the Eshet Amet, the wife of the person who had died. Ha'ach, the brother, or Av, it might be the brother or the father, or Karov min ha'mishpacha, or any other relative may do so. Ve'lo ha'yinu yodim im haya minhag kadmon lifnei Yehuda. He says, what we don't know is whether this was practiced even before Yehuda and Tamar. But Yehuda and Tamar is clearly not traditional Yibum in the limited sense of the brothers. It's a much wider concept of who is going to end up marrying Tamar's in that particular story. And he says, Ubresha Rabba Omru, and in the Midrash it said, Ki Yehuda hitchil be mitzvat Yibum tchila, Yehuda began the whole mitzvah of Yibum, Ki kasheh ki bel asod me'avotav, Nizdarez lahakim otah, because he got this secret really from his fathers, in other words from Avram and Yitzhak. He heard about it, and as a result he decided to follow it through, and he performed this action. V'kasheh bata Torah v'asra eshet ketzat krovim. Later on, the Torah forbids certain relatives from marrying. I'll just finish this and I'll take your question. So Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu latir issa eshet ah. This particular prohibition, this is what the whole Gemara in Yevamos, if you ever learn that Gemara, you'll see the Gemara is really dealing with that right at the beginning. The whole thing of the brother marrying his sister-in-law is really forbidden by the Torah. It's one of the forbidden arayot. But for the purposes of Yibum, it's allowed. Mibnei ha-Yibum, because of this mitzvah of Yibum. Lo rotzash yidcheh mibnei isa eshet achei ha'am v'haben v'zulatam. And originally, the prohibition to marry these extended relatives was in fact, the whole idea was not to push that particular prohibition away. Ki ba'ach hergel hadavar v'to'elet krova v'lo bahem k'moshe hiskati. So he said, so really what the Ramban is trying to explain is that why it became limited to the brother is because all these extended relatives who normally would have been involved, if she doesn't want to marry, the brother doesn't want to marry her, then it'll be the next extended relative. That was considered to be something which was once the Torah came along, it was pushing away too many prohibitions. The whole, again, very simply, the whole idea of Yibum, of the woman marrying her brother-in-law, is something which in fact the Torah forbids, if you want to go and do it without Yibum, and because of this special mitzvah of Yibum, it's only allowed in that limited situation. However, says the Ramban, and he says that this is something amazing. This is the paragraph that I just want to show you here, which is the last paragraph. You jump a paragraph. Hachmei Yisrael, hakadmonim midatam min ha'inyan hanichbad hazeh. The rabbis in the early days, the wise men who understood this whole concept, hinhigu lefanim b'Yisrael, what did they make as a custom? La'asot ha'maseh hazeh b'chol yorshei nachalah. Anyone who is in line to inherit the family plot, the family land, is also involved with marrying whoever comes with the land, if you see what I mean. Botam shelo haya bahem issa hasheer. As long as there's no direct prohibition of marrying a relative directly, in other words, it's something which would be permitted in terms of the laws of marriage, you would end up not only getting the land, inheriting the land, but you would end up marrying the person who is connected to the land as well. V'karu oto geula. That's what is called in the Megillat Rut, is called geula, redemption. V'zeu inyam Boaz. This is what Boaz is all about. V'tam na'ami v'ashchenot. And as we'll see, the whole discussion with Naomi and the Shechenot in chapter 4 next week. V'amaskil yovin. And when he says Amaskil Yovin, he's basically saying that I know it's an impossible concept. It's probably on the verge of being Kabbalistic, because he usually uses that expression when he talks about Kabbalistic ideas. But he says, try and understand. So what I wanted to show you from this Ramban is that he's struggling here, that the fact is this is not really Yibum in the traditional sense of the brother, the second brother marrying the first brother's wife. First brother died. This is a law which is called Geula. And he points out that this was practiced for a certain period of time. And today we don't have this law anymore. We don't have this law. I don't know whether it'll ever come back if we ever get to the point of going back to the laws of Yovel and returning of inherited land and all this sort of thing. If we ever get back to that, I'm not sure what exactly the halachic ramifications are. I know that's something that people are talking about. Something very interesting, something very, very stirring to think about is that the law of Yovel will apply, Mitzvah Hashem, when the majority of Jews is absolutely guaranteed are living in Eretz Yisrael, which is already getting to the point, the tipping point is being arrived at the moment. Within another few years, I think they're saying within 10, maybe 20 years, it'll be absolutely guaranteed the majority of Jews in the world will be living in Israel, in which case all these laws of Yovel, the returning of this land after 50 years and all these sort of short leases, as we would call them, may become back into action all over again. That makes Shemitah much more significant as well, and all these laws which are nowadays kept rabbinically, let's say, might become biblically ordained all over again, midoraita, which is fascinating.
You have to know which sheva you're in.
And then you'll have, then you got the problems of finding out what tribe and nachla, and it's endless possibilities. But you know, it'll be a lot of fun, I guess. Yes.
I don't think the Rambam's saying here.
Ramban
set us all. He after Aaron and died, he just didn't want anything to do with Tamar.
No, he didn't want anything to do.
And Tamar was what got set up.
Correct. And that's the whole point that he wants to make. That when you get to this situation, it's very often the women who take the initiative here. The whole thing that Rambam wants to point out to you is that in this particular story we're going to read in Perek Gimel, who is taking the initiative? It's normally on behalf of Ruth. It's not Boaz. Boaz basically wants to be separate from this whole thing. Right? Boaz we said last week, 3 months. They've been waiting 3 months. Ruth has been going out every day with the na'arot, collecting the barley and whatever she's collecting, and Boaz hasn't said a word. Even though he knows, and we said last week, he was very aware of the family connection, and he's certainly very aware of the fact that she was ignored by the crowd at the beginning. You know, Naomi was definitely, you know, sort of looked down upon because of what happened originally. We're going away from Eretz Yisrael, and nevertheless, Boaz hasn't said a thing. And this really is the introduction that we need to know in order to understand why Naomi and Ruth, who listens to Naomi, why they're so proactive in Perek Gimel. They're going to do something here which is really shocking.
But he may have had a doubt again whether she was Jewish or not.
That's the point. We said again last week that in his Beis Din, it was ready decided, and this is something which had been legislated. We saw this in the Targum last week, that Moavi velo Moaviz has already been established as a halacha in his Beis Din. He is the head of a Beit Din, which had already established this halacha. But it hadn't become widely known. That's the problem.
Where did they get the whole concept of doing it? I mean, the only one we could say that we know did it was
Machlon V'chilion. And it could be because of Machlon V'chilion. In other words, you know, there was a reason for Boaz to instigate this particular discussion in the Sanhedrin. They had a few discussions. Last week we spoke about the idea of blessing people in the name of God. That was something that his Sanhedrin had decided to put into action. Never been done before, right? When you say, how are you? You say, Baruch Hashem. Right. We say that quite naturally nowadays. But once upon a time, it wasn't like that. Okay, because they didn't want to, they felt they might be taking the name of God in vain, you know, Ten Commandments, right? So this is all part of what Boaz is instituting in his particular Sanhedrin. But the question is, how widespread it becomes, does the Olam, does the Tzibur know about it? The answer is no. And that's why it becomes so controversial over here. And that's why in the end, Boaz goes through with it, right? Even though the Ploni Almoni turns around and says, I can't marry her, right? You know, you want me to marry her, she's Moavia. She's not Jewish. What do you want from me? Right? And you'll see that there is a tremendous resentment from the other relative who's being asked not only to redeem the land, but to marry Ruth at the same time. He's offended that he's being asked to marry her. So Boaz comes in and says, well, listen, there is a halacha, and obviously with two Jews there's three opinions, and nothing has changed about that, right? And there's obviously a whole bunch of different opinions over here as well about this, but Boaz was convinced this was absolutely correct, and he goes ahead and marries her. Now, I'll tell you something else which really will blow your mind. Yes?
I have a question, Rabbi, because all the ceremony and things like that is kind of getting the men or the brothers off the hook with the ceremony.
Yeah, yeah.
What about the woman? Are she allowed to marry somebody else without this ceremony or without this ceremony?
No, this is tied her up.
If you look at the Yehuda and Tamar and things like that,
yeah.
She went and she got
yeah.
pregnant somehow,
yeah.
they look at her like she's Totiyah
Vetisaret.
They're going to kill her.
Yeah, they're going to kill her.
It's, so what is her, this
yeah,
side?
Yeah, the answer is they're looking from the woman's side. I don't want to go with in the Yehud and Tamar story now, but we can. But in this case over here, it's absolutely crucial that to understand that Naomi and Ruth, and Naomi understands, that if Boaz is not going to fulfill his responsibility, his hitchayvut, then what's going to happen is that the women have to take the initiative. The women have to go ahead and do it. In the chalitza, what happens is that the woman takes off the shoe of the man. He wears it. She takes it off, right? And there's a yarkabafanav. She spits on the ground. And he is given a very uncomplimentary title, Bet Chalutzana. He's known as the person who did not want to continue the line from the deceased brother. So he's given a very unpleasant title. So in the end, this is something where women are given a tremendous amount of possibility of preserving and continuing the name of the family that they married into by going through this ceremony and being allowed then, if the brother doesn't want to continue the name, to get out of it. And therefore, then she can go and marry whoever she wants. So I think this gives the woman a very big strength over here. And in fact, that's what's going on here with Naomi. That's what's going on with Ruth, right? That they are taking the initiative. They are doing something here, which is shocking, as you'll see in a minute. But at the same time, it's important to understand what's going on. I want to add one more. Just listen to this. It's on the page. I just want to show you this because I can't make this up. But Chazal can say this. At the bottom of the same page, and it's the whole question of why they're waiting 3 months. And I'm going to read, it's about 7 lines from the bottom, and it's underlined, Ha'im ibnei tarud haya od be'evlo. Now the question is, why did Boaz wait for 3 months? So the suggestion is because he is an avelus. What is he an avelus about? So this is one comment from the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Oto ayom shebata ruta moivah l'eretz Yisrael. When Ruth came to Israel, Meta ishto shabaz. Boaz's wife died. All right, so he had a wife and she died.
But that's 1 month.
Sorry, there's 3 months.
It's 1 month for a while.
It's three. Well, all right, but he's still, he's still grieving. But let's look at the bottom comment, and this will really blow you away. And we know that the tradition is Boaz corresponds to Iftsan in the Book of Shoftim. The only thing we know about Iftsan is that he had lots of kids. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters. So what happened to all those children? Boaz had all these children. Look at this. The rabbis say something shocking. Omar Rav, it's the last 4 lines. If Sanzeh Boaz, my commission, it's a big deal. What are you telling us? Ki idach de rabba baravhuna, de Omar rabba baravhuna, Omar Rav, because this rabbi said the following. Me'av esri mishta'ot asa Boaz lebana. Boaz made 120 weddings. Wow. That's really shocking. That's just give me the chills. Just thinking about it. He must have, I don't know, I don't want to comment. He made 120 parties, 120 wedding parties. Shinema, because we're told, Vahilo Shloshim Banim and Shloshim Banot. And he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. So I suppose for each son, in other words, you're counting each wedding, the pairs, right? So it's 30 plus 30 times 2 is 120. So in other words, he made weddings for 120 people. And what happened? Shalach achutza ushloshim banot hevi lebanav min achutz. These all came from the outside. And look at the last 3 lines, and it's so unbelievable. Kulam metu b'chaya. The whole lot died before he died. He saw all of his children. 60 children. Plus their spouses, all died before he died. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. So what? And this is brought in Midrash. And if you look on the other side, the suggestion is, and I don't want to go through the whole thing here, is that Boaz, at this point in time, doesn't believe that marrying Ruth is going to get anywhere because he is so, as you say in Yiddish, miyuash, right? In Ivrit, miyuash means he's so in a state of yiyush, of giving up hope. He doesn't believe that there's any hope now for anything in the future. He's an old man, he's 80 years old. He's lost Nebuch, he's ganze mishpoch, he's lost his wife, lost all the kids. And what's left for him? So Rav Achrach wants to suggest that because of that, that's why he's so dormant over here. Right, he's not atzlan. He's not lazy about it. He's actually dormant. He doesn't feel that there's any hope There's nothing. Look at the, if you turn over the page, the top line, Hayesh lo o tikva libanon. Is there any hope for him to build any more? Oim yesh ish kamo ra'uy v'zakai livnot bayit acher. Is there anyone who can build another house for him? Another family? You can understand that this is why Boaz doesn't do anything at this point. Yeah.
But he was very active in the harvest.
He's active in the harvest, looking after his crops.
If he has no hope, he wouldn't care.
That's true, but you know what? There's hope and hope. This is something where after going through all of this, you know, you say to yourself, That's a very good question. It's an excellent question, but at this point in time, I don't know. You know, he's left with this question mark, and maybe he's in his own mind, he doesn't even know. It's going to be sorted. It's going to be decided for him. All right. But at this point, you're right. This is something. But what Rav Bachar wants to point out to you is that, you know, with all of this midrashic information, you begin to understand why Boaz is not just waiting 3 months to see whether she's pregnant or not, which is what we suggested last time. It's a bit more than that. The fact is that look what he's just been through. The man is drained. You know, what else has he got left to look forward to in this circumstance? But look at this. On the basis of this introduction, and I wanted to make those introductory comments. I'm going to run out of time here, but let's go through the chapter. Perek Gimel, chapter 3. Now look at this. It's an unbelievable story. If you've never learned this before, I don't know what to say to you. I'll just go with the flow. V'tomer lo Naomi chamuta biti. As we saw that the relationship is becoming very close. So Naomi says to her mother-in-law, says to her, biti, my daughter, halo avakesh lach manoach asher itavla. I'm looking now for a rest for you. In other words, something which will rectify your situation and everything will be put right. V'ata halo Boaz modatenu. We know that we've got Boaz, our relative. He's a karov. Asher hayitim et narotav. You were with his girls. Remember last week we had the whole thing with the narim, narot, but we spoke about that. Hinehu zored goren asorim malayla. Tonight he's going to be in his threshing floor where the barley is. So all the rabbis say, why at night time? What's he doing over there at night time? The answer is because he was looking after his property. All right, he was protecting his interests. He personally couldn't hire a security firm. He was the security firm. So Naomi says to Ruth, and this is unbelievable. She says to her, "V'ratzach, v'chatzt, v'sacht, v'samt." Right, this is going to get your gutturals going here. You'll have to wash and anoint yourself and put on sim lo taich alaych, your best clothes. The rabbis say bigdei Shabbat. Put on your Shabbos clothes. V'yoradet, and we read it, v'yoradeti, hagoren, go to this flesh place, the threshing floor where he is. Al tivadi le'ish, don't let anybody know that you're going. Ad kaloto lechov lishtot, until he is finished. In other words, wait for him to finish, and then go in there secretly. All right, this is unbelievable bit. And for Ruth, this is really shocking because she comes from a society which is so parutz, which is so immoral. And here she's being told, essentially by a mother-in-law, looks like to do something which is terribly immoral. And it says, Dalet vayihi b'shachbo, when he's lying there, v'yodat et ha-makom asher yishkav shom, know the place where he's lying, uvat v'gilit margalotam, and he's got a blanket. So what you do is you lift up the end of the blanket and expose his feet. V'shachav, and you will lie there. And I just want to make one comment here, which again Rav Bachrach makes. He says all of these words that we had, v'sach, v'rachat, it says v'samt, but we read it, you see that v'samti, right? It's even though it's second person, Naomi is telling her what to do, but there is the yud here, which we don't, is part of the word, even though we don't read it like that. And here we've got v'shachavti. In other words, what Naomi is saying is that Ruth, go, and really it's me going with you. I am going to be with you, my spirit, my everything that you are doing. I know this is going against everything that I've just been teaching you. All of the tzniyas, all the courses that you did in all the seminaries that you went to for the last, I don't know how many months or whatever. I'm telling you to do everything against it, but I will be there. Right? Which is why it's put in the first person, even though we read it in the second person. Very interesting. And he says, V'hu yagid lach et asher ta'asin, he will tell you what you have to do. Now what is going on here, as I said, is that we have to understand that now Naomi is being proactive. She wants Boaz to be put in a position where For want of a better word, he has to marry. It's almost like a shotgun wedding here. All right, if you want to look at it like that. It's very interesting. Hey, Vatomer Elea, Kol Asher Tomri, and again, the word Eli, said the word Eli is missing. She says to her, everything that you say, Eli, to me, Eser, I will do. And the word Eli is missing because in essence, Ruth has taken her own self out of the picture. It's all about Naomi coming with her to be with her and essentially to guide her through this process of making it very clear to Boaz that he's got an obligation to fulfill and he should fulfill it. And of course, Naomi was hoping that he would do it straight there and then. He would be with her, he would consummate some sort of relationship with her, and that would be it. All right, and that was the plan, even though it's an unbelievable plan. This is, as I said, this story is it's really unbelievable. And look what it says, Vatered Agarin, so she goes. Vatas, and it turns out that Ruth was smart, because had she gone dressed up to the nines, then people would have seen her, then people would have suspected her of being Zona, being a harlot, a prostitute, and then Boaz's reputation would have gone out of the window. So she decided what she did was, as she got to the threshing floor, dressed in her normal clothes. In other words, she was just going there. Maybe they knew that they were related. She was coming to help out, whatever it may be, you know, dressed in her work clothes. And then she, as it were, put on her good clothing when she was in this particular building, whatever it was. So she kind of switched around the actual process. Sorry?
It says,
before it says, correct, and then Vatera, and it's the other way around. And that's the deal. And it says, "Kachol asher tzivta hamuta," or according to everything that her mother-in-law had commanded. Now listen to this. But it's a great, unbelievable story. "Vayochol Boaz vayesh vayitav libo." He had a good dinner and he was very happy. "Vayavol lishkav b'ksei ha'reiman." He went to lie down at the side of this heap of barley, whatever it was that he was protecting. "Vatavo balach." He came there very secretly. "Vatagav margalotav v'tishkam." And she, as it were, went through this procedure. Margalotav, again, the idea of the revealing the feet which are going to be symbolic, I guess, of the connection with the shoe, which is coming up, the whole, it's a remiss to him, that he is going to have to get involved with a process which will eventually involve sort of putting his feet down on the ground. Not necessarily doing chalitza in the sense of rejecting her marriage to Ruth, but on the other hand, quite the opposite here. He is being being given a hint that he should actually get the message that his feet have to walk on the land, which is now going to be redeemed in the name of the husband and family of Ruth, the sons that had died in Chutz La'aretz. So look what happens. Hey, Chet. Vayhi b'chatzi alayla. And here comes the it's a great story. Midnight, right? Big Ben. Boom. If you know what Big Ben is. Vayecharan ha'ish vayilafet. And the man trembles. Alright? Because he realized someone's there. And it says he put his hand on her head. He realized that it wasn't a man. It was a girl. And he was very shocked. Vayhine isha shochev maglotav. There's a woman laying there. Vayyama mi'at. So he says to her, who are you? But because it's all dark, I mean, you know, it's pitch black, you can't see her. But Toma Anochi Rut Amatecha, I am Ruth, your maidservant, who farasta kanafecha lamatecha, spread your cloak over your, in other words, symbolically, you have to take me under your wing. Ki goel ata, and this is the remez of Geula. You are the Redeemer, and of course, in her mouth is the wonderful sense of future prophecy. That not only are you going to redeem me, but in the end of the day, your descendant is going to redeem the world. It's going to redeem Klal Yisrael. Goel Otter. It's beautiful.
So it's not suggesting that this is she's telling basically it's put up a shot like
Yibum or Chalitza. Well, you missed the introduction. You've got to listen to the introduction. We spoke all about that. This is not Yibum. This is not classic Yibum. This is not, it's Geula, and it's a whole, we went through the Ramban, I have to give you the page. It's a question which, it's very significant what's going on here, and the fact that they are so proactive, because they waited for Boaz to do something, and he did nothing. Vayoma, and what does he say? Barucha ad Lashem, biti. And of course, Boaz is not taking advantage of her, on the contrary, he's treating her with such respect. He says, you're blessed to the Lord, hey, tavt, chastecha achrom in a rishon, your last kindness was even greater than your first, and the whole rabbinic discussion what chasodim he's referring to, looking after the mother-in-law, etc., etc. Levulti lechet achareya bachurim, and you didn't go after the lads. In dal v'mashir, whether they're rich or poor. In other words, you're staying with me, and you stayed with the family, and you just did not run after the first young man that you could get your hands on. You have been very kind. V'ata yudalav, just going through the psukim. Biti al tiri, he says, do not be afraid, my daughter. And of course, he's now calling her biti, which we saw already before. Kol asher tomri esela, everything you've said, I will do. Ki yodea kosha ami ki eshet chayil at. He was Gibor Chayil, remember, from last week's perek, and now he's calling her Eshet Chayil. And there's this beautiful kind of, like they say in English, the penny is dropped over here. In his mind, he now understands exactly what she is and what she represents, who she is. She's a woman of valor, Eshet Chayil, with everything that phrase obviously conjures up in one's mind. And that's what he's saying. And it's absolutely precious. And look what happens. Ve'ata ki amnam, ki im goel anochi. He says, now listen, there's a problem. If I am the Redeemer, as you have said, and I understand my obligation, v'gam yesh goel karov mimeni, there's another one who should be consulted first, because he is more closely related than I am. He's yoter karov. He's closer. So what do you got to do? Yud gimel. Lini halayla. Stay here tonight. In other words, don't go out, because then really the tongues will start wagging if somebody sees you leaving in the middle of the night. V'haya babok, and in the early morning light you can leave. Im yigalech tov yigam. And tov here is a double meaning. If he will redo geula, he will the other relative, then tov yigam, it's good. Or tov is his name. Then tov, his name, he will do the redemption. V'imlo yachpots the galeb, if he doesn't want to do it, ugaltich anochi chay Hashem, I promise you in the name of God that I will do it. Shechvi ad habokeh, stay here tonight. The rabbis say, and Rav Lipwitz brings this, that the nisoyon for Boaz was greater than Yosef with the wife of Potiphar. Unbelievable. And he was so tested at this point, even though he's now an old man and she's this young girl, but he's in a position here where, you know, you could literally take advantage. Nobody would believe her, you know, particularly with the fact that she's coming from Moab, and they will just, you know, she's gone back to her old ways and everything else. She'd be in an impossible position, but that shows Boaz's character, what an incredibly fine, refined character this man really was. And Yudalev Vatishkav Margalotav Adaboka, she's stayed there till the morning. Vatokon Baterim Yakiish Adraish, got up very early, nobody would recognize, particularly in that sort of dim light of the morning. Vayom Al Yivadaki Baisha Gurin, and he said, don't tell anyone that, you know, you came to the threshing floor this night. Vayom Havi mit pachad asher alayich v'chaziba. But tochezba, in other words, bring me this kind of scarf that you're wearing. Vayomet sheish saorim vayoshes. This is so beautiful. Ba'alea vayavo ha'ir. He gave her six, how do you translate this? Six pieces. Six barleys, measured six barley, pieces of barley. So you'll say to me, what is he giving her six pieces of barley? Can't make a soup out of six pieces of barley. The answer is that he was saying to Aremes. The rabbis say that this is a remez to six descendants that will come from Ruth. Six kings of Israel. Some say it refers to King David, then it refers to King Shlomo. There's all different description here about who it's referring to. And that was what Ruth would take back to Naomi. And Naomi, of course, is up all night. She can't sleep, you can imagine. She just wants, desperate to find out what's happening. And look what happens, Tet Zion. Vatavo el chamotah, she comes home to Naomi, Vatoma mi at bani. So the rabbis say, what's that question? She knows who she is. Mi at bani. The question is, who do you belong to now? Did he consummate the marriage? Are you his wife? Mi at bani. Are you still to me, or you belong to him? In other words, Naomi was hoping that would be it. The whole thing was a done deal. Vatageid light asher sala ha'ish, and she said everything which the man had said. She showed the six pieces of barley. Ki omar Eli. Again, the word Eli, not in the text, right? Ki omar, because he said, and as we said, this was in fact not only to Ruth, but Ruth had sort of, you know, it wasn't herself which was in the whole thing. She was so selfless in this whole situation that it really was a message to Naomi. Al tavoi rekama chamatech, do not go home empty to your mother-in-law. Take these things, because Naomi will understand what they mean. Vatomesh vibiti ad asher teidin echipol davar. So Naomi says to her, stay, my daughter, we'll see what happens. Ki lo yishkota ish, because now I know this man will not be silent. I've woken him up. He's no longer going to be sheket. There's not going to be silence anymore, like he was for 3 months. Because the whole thing will be settled today. And of course, you remember the third chazal, which one has to just mention, is that, of course, we know the story that they do get married. They stay together for one night, they conceive a child, and the next day he dies. Boaz dies the next day. Unbelievable. It's an unbelievable story, this story. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, question.
I think,
one and two.
I think Boaz didn't want her to leave at night, not that no one would know, because he sends her out in the morning.
Yeah,
because it's plain dangerous,
and dangerous as well. Bad neighborhood.
The reason his Nisayon was harder than Yosef's.
Yeah,
Yosef was able to run out.
Yeah,
he had to be there all night,
and he had to stay.
He
yeah, and he couldn't leave. Yeah, yeah, incredible, absolutely incredible. It's an incredible story. Yeah.
If Ruth is associated, she comes with the land and the deal.
Yeah.
Then why couldn't she and Naomi just live in the land and?
Yeah, because it's not about the land, it's about the future generations. That's what this story is really about. And it's because of, this is a means to an end. The whole thing of the redeeming of the land is a means to essentially ensuring, right, that the messianic process is continued. They, as I said at the beginning, first week, the bigger picture and the smaller picture. The small picture is these events, which are not very small, to put it bluntly. But the bigger picture is the messianic enterprise is happening. And it's happening, it started off with Yehuda and Tamar, created a Peretz, and that went down the line, and now we're continuing it, and we're to continue it through Ruth and Boaz. And of course, this is the ultimate comment at the end of the Sefer, because the Sefer ends the story, and then gives us the Yichus, right, the family of, which goes eventually to David. And of course, once we're going to David, we understand that we have to go beyond David, and we go into the Messianic line. And this is what this story is really about, big picture. Okay, and that's why it can't just stay with a piece of land. That is a means to an end. But this whole story, as I said at the beginning, without understanding the Ramban, without understanding the fact that Yibum seems to be, or the concept of redemption, which is linked to the idea of Yibum in the Torah, that we understand, is something where if the man is not active, then the woman can take the initiative. That's exactly what's happened here. And that's why this story, without the introduction of the Ramban, is very difficult. Because, you know, we say to ourselves, this is such a breach of tzniut, such a breach of modesty, that how can this be condoned? And again, Reb Lipovitz talks about so beautifully, he says, and Abe mentioned to me that Reb Alpert said this, that this is also giving us a very wonderful picture of their lives, such an intimate snapshot, right? That's the expression. And Lipovitz says that as well. This threshing floor, that he's sleeping there because he has to protect his property, and at the same time, the language of kindness that he displays towards her. You know, this is something very, very unique and very special. Again, when you learn this story without these introductions, without this framework in which you put the story, it's really quite a shocking story. But when you understand how it really works and how it comes together, it's very special. And again, the word Goel, Redeemer, that is the key. And if we understand that, and then read ahead, Mitzvah Shem, to chapter 4, which hopefully we'll finish next week, then you'll understand really the whole clue, the whole key to the book of Ruth, what it's about, what it really represents for us, and why we read it on Shavuot, and all the connections that we understand, but with a deeper awareness of the story, the language of the story, the emotions of the story, everything about it is very, very special. Thank you very much, everyone.